This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, with episode number 846. Thank you so much for joining me today. Gosh, there's so much going on in the marketplace. It is incredibly busy. Inventory is scarce. You all probably have heard that mantra by now. But one of the great things that is happening out there is that, I call capitalism the most successful religion ever. It's just such a wonderful thing because entrepreneurs come in and they fill the void in the marketplace and they come up with unique products. And in the lending world, that is no exception. For many, many years, there were really just two major choices on the spectrum of lending. There were the fantastic, highly desirable, coveted Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, or what's known as agency loans. And you all know those are a great deal, but they make you jump through a lot of hoops. They're difficult to get. And just remember, though, when you have to jump through a lot of hoops, so do those renters who want to buy. So that makes the rental market stronger, right? There's always an offsetting effect to everything in life. And then at the other end of the lending spectrum, there were hard money loans, very expensive loans, 12 to 15%, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, even 10 points. Yes, you did not hear me wrong. 10 points, 10% of the loan amount, occasionally paid up front on hard money loans, really, really expensive. But in between, there have been these lenders, and we've profiled some on the show over the years, that have come in to fill the void in that middle space that's been vacant for so many years. These are the private lenders. Many of them get their money from hedge funds, their private equity groups, or whatever. I've got one of those on with me today to help me with the intro, and it's Mr. Bill Green. Bill, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Good, good. Hey, thanks for joining me for a few minutes here on the intro. I wanted to give our listeners, before we dive into our main segment today, which is Darren Bloomquist, who's back from Adam Data and Realty Track, talking about forecasting and what's coming up in the market, what's going on in the market right now, and so forth. We had him speak at our Meet the Masters event last January in Irvine, California. And talking to you, you are filling your company, your new company, and you're quite an entrepreneur in your own right. You had a big tax lien business that you sold, and you had like $2 billion in asset value in that business. And you've done a bunch of things. You've got a book out as well. But today I just want to talk really about the financing in this middle space in the market in the intro portion of the show. So two types of financing that your company offers that I think will be of interest to our listeners. One is the long-term buy and hold financing, 30-year fixed rate financing. And then you have some other options where people can get maybe a 7-year fixed or a 5-year fixed, and then something that becomes adjustable after that. But then you've also got this other area that can really help our investors who want to buy a property as a, I'll say kind of quote unquote cash buyer. They're not really a cash buyer, but they can buy with cash essentially by getting some easy, quick bridge financing from you, buy the property with cash, and then refi out of that loan that's a more expensive loan into an agency loan, like a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac type loan, within just a few months, maybe a month or 2 months even. And so there's sort of two types of financing. I wanted to have you share some rate information with our listeners today on, Bill. So which one would you like to start with?
Well, let's start with the 30-year fixed rate. It's our most one of our most popular products. And
fantastic.
Sure. And so if you're a long-term investor, you take the 30-year fixed rate product, which has a couple of great features. One is after 3 years, you're able to refinance out, pay off without any prepayment penalty, which is very attractive. And then if you want to finance this product at and take 75% of the value of the property, and you're a 740 or above FICO score, your rate's 7.6%.
Okay, so hang on. So 25% down, that's pretty attractive. So you get good leverage, 75% LTV or loan-to-value ratio. And at a 740 FICO score. So you got to have a good credit score there. And that rate currently, and rates are always subject to change, of course, would currently be 7.6%, right?
Correct.
Okay. And if your FICO score is 720, you knock it down 20 points, not quite as high.
That would be 8%.
8% rate on that one. Okay, good. So, people might be listening, Bill, and they might be thinking, well, heck, I can get a traditional Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loan, and I can get that now for, I don't know what they'd get it for, but maybe 4.6%, just for example. Why would someone be excited about this type of program?
So there's a couple of reasons. First is, once you get over 10 or 20, I don't know what the guidelines are today. I think it was 10. They just moved it up to 20. So once you get over that amount of property, you can't get an agency loan.
Yeah. And again, that depends. This is for each spouse. So if you're married and both spouses can qualify, then you can double it, right? Double that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac limit. So, but once you're past that, and we have lots of investors that are past that, they don't know what to do. They either got to buy with cash, straight cash, get no leverage at all, or the second best thing after the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac traditional loans are to go through a company like yours. The property can still make a lot of sense, even at these higher interest rates, right?
Correct. So we're not going to put you through hoops. We're going to provide very high touch customer service. And the best thing is, you're going to be able to close a rental loan with us in 15 days, unlike the agencies, which could take months. So when you're out there shopping, you're looking for properties, speed is critical. So there we are as your partner standing next to you at the closing table to provide you with, 70 up to 75% of the purchase price of that property.
And the rates go down pretty significantly with lower leverage. Of course, all our listeners who follow my 10 commandments of successful investing, they want to get leverage. Okay. They believe in leverage. I've convinced them of that it is a great tool, a very powerful tool. It has to be treated with respect, of course, but it's a powerful tool to grow your wealth. And if you go with 40% down, and I know you don't have these rates offhand, so I don't want to put you on the spot, because we could talk endless number of combinations here, right? Our investment counselors can send you the link to Bill's website, and you can go there and you can just get the quote yourself in a couple of minutes, very quickly. Just, if you know your FICO score, you punch it in and you can play with some different scenarios, right? In terms of different loan to value ratios, different amounts of down payment, different terms. If you don't want to do 30-year fixed, you can get a lower rate initially and get like a 7-year fixed and have some options there, right, Bill?
Correct. And we offer a 3-year fix, a 3-1-arm, 5-1-arm, and a 7-1-arm.
Fantastic. Okay. So that's the buy and hold type of financing that's available in this middle market with these private lenders. Okay. And, we Americans have got to understand something. We are spoiled, because in the United States, real estate has been subsidized by the government since the Great Depression, okay, through Fannie Mae, okay? And that is, those rates are artificially low. So, you know, if you don't like paying a lot of tax, then, you know, the way you'll get some of your tax benefits back is to borrow money. You know, it's a government subsidy. That's what it is. It's a welfare program for real estate investors. That's basically what it is. So get all your Fannie Mae loans, all your Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae type agency loans, maximize those. Once you've done that, then you go to this second segment in the market. Not as attractive, but certainly a lot better than paying all cash. Okay, now the second type of financing program your company offers that's pretty interesting is a bridge loan. So first of all, can you define bridge loan for the listeners real quickly?
Sure. A bridge loan is very simple. It's the bridge to taking a property, whether it's to acquire and then later get a different type of financing. But the most popular is the bridge loan to acquire a property, renovate it, and then sell it. And all that is done in typically less than 1 year. Our average bridge loan is 7 months and some even shorter. The good news is it's interest only. So the only thing you have to carry is the interest payment. There's no prepayment penalty. So if you buy a property and you're going to refinance it out on a long-term rate with an agency loan, it's perfect because, you know, it's going to be less than 1% a month in virtually every case. And, you know, it's extremely attractive. It's quick. We can close a bridge loan in less than 10 days. And the other good news is that you can actually pre-qualify. So many of our borrowers come in and they get pre-approved. So they can actually go out and go shopping and know with confidence they're going to go to that table and they're going to close with 75 and sometimes more of their purchase price of that property.
Okay, so we have one of our local market specialists, one of our affiliates through our network, who really doesn't want to sell properties to buyers that do financing. They want cash-only buyers. This is where this could become attractive, where basically you can essentially buy with, and I say, quote-unquote, cash. Okay, it's sort of not really cash in the sense that it's your cash, but the cash can come from your company on a short-term bridge loan, and then the plan is you refi out of that loan pretty quickly, hopefully in, you know, a month or two, maybe a little longer, who knows, you know, and you do want to get pre-qualified for that refinance so you have your ducks in the row, so you know you get out of it. Now, nothing's for sure. Disasters do happen from time to time where, for some reason, you can't close the refi. Okay, so that I just want to say that is a risk, okay, but it's a relatively small risk as long as you truly get pre-qualified. So what do the bridge loans look like? What are the rates? What are the terms? And again, you quoted these already for me, like any rates, always subject to change with the marketplace, but at a 720 FICO score and 25% down, what does that rate look like?
Just short of 11%, so less than 1% a month.
Okay, so less than 1% a month. Now, again, this is an expensive loan. This is what people are used to in the hard money market. I loan money like this all the time, okay? And people pay me those types of rates. Again, we've talked a lot about hard money lending on the show over the years. One of the really hard parts is to keep your money in the game. Okay, so that's a whole different discussion. But as a borrower, on the borrower side of the table, you know, the idea is you're only going to have this loan for a very short time. Now, there's no prepayment penalty at all. Like, can someone borrow it and literally pay it off in 30 days and not even pay 1% interest on it?
Absolutely.
Are there any points?
Ranges between 2 and 3 points, and the average turns out to be about 2.4%.
Okay. So if you do this and say your loan amount is $70,000, that's the loan amount, you know, maybe you're buying a property, well, say $75,000, so the property's $100,000. So you're going to pay maybe 2 points, okay? So that's going to be $1,500 in points, and you're going to pay, in this example, 1 month of interest, okay? So another point. So you're essentially, for the privilege of buying the property with cash, that your fees are going to be about $2,300 or so, extra fees, right?
Correct.
Is that the right way to look at it?
Correct. The only thing is, there's a minimum of $2,500 in fees.
So minimum $2,500.
And then there's $595 legal fee and $100 processing fee. So it's,
okay.
Yep.
So $3,000 is what it's going to cost you for that
Correct.
Privilege of having the opportunity to pay cash without using your own cash. Okay, good.
Approximately,
so,
yes.
Yeah, again, we just wanted to expose you to some of these other options that we've done on other episodes over the years. Let's get to our guest. Before we do that, of course, we've got our Oklahoma City JHU, Jason Hartman University event and property tour coming up in early July. Go to jasonhartman.com, click on events to register and get more information on that. And we will see you in Oklahoma City. That'll be all day Saturday, all day Sunday. Meals are included with that event. I think it'll just be a really nice time. So come out and meet us, meet our clients, meet our team in Oklahoma City for that. Jason Hartman University Live, and then, of course, the property tour as well. And this weekend, just coming up in a couple of days, we got our Venture Alliance event in Chicago. We just had two more people register for that yesterday. So that's our Venture Alliance Mastermind. Check out VentureAllianceMastermind.com for info on that one. Probably too late for you to join us in Chicago, but our next event is slated for September. We have these quarterly weekend events, and they are just phenomenal first-class events. So that's the Venture Alliance Mastermind. And Bill, thank you so much for joining me today. If anyone wants to get in touch with Bill, get the link that we talked about to his website where you can go and get your own loan pricing. Just go to JasonHartman.com, or if you're already working with one of our investment counselors, talk to them and they will connect you with Bill's team. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's dive in and hear from Darren Bloomquist as we talk about what's going on in the market today and what to expect next. Here we go. Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome back a returning guest and one of our speakers from our last January Meet the Masters of Income Property event held in Irvine, California, and that is Darren Bloomquist. And he was the first person I had on the show after the Trump election. He's with Adam Data Services and Realty Track and has some great predictions on where things are going, what's going on in the market. Well, I shouldn't say he has predictions. Maybe he has predictions. I don't know yet. We'll ask him. But
yeah, I have a couple of those up my sleeve, but predictions might be a little bit of a strong word, but
crystal ball always working, right?
Forecasting.
Okay, forecasting. Good, yeah. Good stuff. Well, Darren, welcome back. It's great to talk to you again. What do you see going on in the market? I mean, it's a pretty heady, frothy time. It seems like what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, it just seems like every time we think that the market's going to level off and cool off a little bit, we just see it get stronger. And we did see that. You talked about the election in the first few months of the year. We did see one area where we did see cooling was refinancing. And we look at loan origination data, and there was a bit of a pullback, or there was actually a pretty dramatic pullback in the first quarter in refinance originations. And there was actually a pullback in, not as dramatic in purchase originations and sales, but I think that's overshadowed by the fact that prices were up. The home price appreciation accelerated in the first quarter. And so I think I would chalk that dip in home purchases, sales, and purchase originations up to more of a lack of supply than a lack of demand, as home prices pushed up, just continue to accelerate and getting even close to back to double digit appreciation nationwide. We haven't been there for a while in the first quarter of this year. So we continue to see a market that's, I would say, is on fire, but the hallmark is this low inventory relative to the demand that's there in the marketplace right now.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. So when we talk about the real estate market, I always think it's important, and probably know what I'm going to say, is to segment it into three categories at least. And I know you do this geographically with every county in the U.S., but just three conceptual categories of linear markets, cyclical markets, and hybrid markets. So linear markets being the ones that, my company likes, those sort of staid, conservative, kind of boring markets. and the cyclical markets being the high-flying California, South Florida, northeastern markets, those types of things, and the rest of the Pacific Northwest too. Certainly, I'd include Seattle as a cyclical market, along with the other ones I mentioned. So, do you have any thoughts, Darren? You know, when you look at the country that way, as to what's going on. I mean, it feels to me like we're really past the point of fundamentals in these upscale markets that are just feel very bubbly to me. But it doesn't seem like it's that way in, you know, middle America and these linear markets. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. With an interesting trend that I think, just as you were talking, kind of cemented in my mind, actually, that we're seeing is that some of these, and you probably have, this probably still fits within your theory, but I do think that we're seeing some of the linear markets actually become almost more cyclical in nature because this market is so hot. And I think this may also be an outgrowth of the fact that information and technology has come so far in the last 10 years and property data. So there are markets, you know, the one that came to mind, and there's a lot of other things going on there, but is, you know, somewhere like Denver. I would start putting that in the cyclical market, where the cyclical category, maybe you could call it hybrid, but
we have another name. We call those hybrid. Yeah, exactly. I didn't mention that. Yeah.
So we're seeing because these, well, first of all, I agree with the fact that a lot of those cyclical markets are way past the fundamentals, and we look at affordability as kind of a good benchmark, and many of them are past their normal affordability levels.
Okay, so tell us about that. And when you were interviewing me for an article you're doing, we talked about that. The Housing Affordability Index, one of my favorite indexes, although it has its flaws, probably the biggest one being that it doesn't really account for immigration. So when you have a bunch of foreign money flowing into a market, like in Southern California, when you have all this Chinese money, for example, or New York City, where you've got all this Russian money, right, and Ukrainian money flowing into those markets, or in Miami, you got all this South American money, right? So, you know, those are just examples. So it doesn't really account for that very well, but it's still my favorite index. If I only could pick one, it'd be the Housing Affordability Index. I think that's a good, you know, forecaster of what's going on in the market. And you said something to me that was pretty interesting about the Housing Affordability Index.
Yeah, what we saw in the first quarter was that we look at 379 counties across the country, so it's pretty widespread. 25% of those counties, which turns out to be 95 counties, are now less affordable than their historic norms. And so an affordability index in our index of 100 is normal affordability for that market. 95%, or one in every four counties now, is less affordable than that, is below that 100 index. So that's, and a lot of them are the places that you'd think of, like the Brooklyns of the world, the San Francisco areas, the coast, LA.
Orange County, where you live.
Yeah, so that's not so surprising, but then you start, and we created a heat map of this. It's interactive. If you just Google Home Affordability Index, it should be the first quarter. It should be the first thing that pops up. But in this heat map, you can see there's these red means the county is below its affordability index. And you see this red starting to pop up in the middle of the country too, in some of these areas. So Denver is a place I'll pick on that's past that I've mentioned already. Another one is a lot of markets in Texas, have gone past that affordability threshold. So I think that's one thing that's surprising to me in that whole conversation of linear versus cyclical markets. And I think it somewhat has to do with the technology advances that people now can more easily buy a property across the country than they could 10 years ago. So there's fewer of these hidden gems.
Yeah. I think, Darren, by the way, I just I want to just stop you there for a moment, because that is such a good point. You know, we get people still, but it's much less common. When I was doing this back in 2004, I got a lot more people saying, well, gosh, shouldn't I only buy property near my home? And well, there's two problems with that. Number one, you've got to live in the best investment market. And so if you don't, then you're going to make a mistake. And number two is that even if you do live in the best investment market, if you buy properties near your home, you're not going to be diversified. And, you know, the old saying, all real estate is local. So I just say, take the most historically proven asset class, income property, but diversify geographically in 3 to 5 markets, not at least 3, but not more than 5. And so you're diversified a little bit, right? And that's a good idea to, you know, just be a more conservative investor. But yeah, the technology has really enabled this revolution in real estate investing. You know, I like to say, and we haven't talked about autonomous vehicles and their impact in real estate with you, but I've certainly talked a lot about it on the show. And one of the things I always say, Darren, is geography is less meaningful than it's ever been in human history. It's still meaningful. Don't get me wrong. I mean, location, location, location definitely still matters, but less so than ever. Okay. I would argue geography is less meaningful than it's ever been in human history. And technology has just, it's just an amazing time to be alive, you know,
stuff we it can is, do. Yeah. And yes, yeah, there's a lot of the word technology is about the broadest term I could probably pick, but, you know, specifically talking about the availability of data out there for investors to research other locations other than their own. And then we license our data to a lot of folks who are helping investors make decisions about a certain market that may be thousands of miles away from where they're located. So that type of technology has really been booming in this real estate boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question about it. You know, you can go online, you can look at the street view of a property, you can look at the satellite images, you can use Zillow, for better or worse, it's not perfect by any means, to research things. You can use your website to research things. Then when it comes to maintenance, you can source people and parts and products so easily, and you can price check things when, you know, the repairman says, well, hey, that garbage disposal is going to cost this much. You go to HomeDepot.com or Lowe's.com and you can, or Amazon, and see, no, it should only cost this much. So it's really incredible the kind of checks and balances, if you will, that we have nowadays. So there's some phenomenal tools, you know, of course, FaceTime video, Skype video, you know, just the availability of such rich media instantaneously is really incredible. You know, young people, Gen Y, does not realize the way it used to be.
Yes. Yeah. Those youngins.
Those youngins, they don't. Well, hey, you're close to being one of those youngins yourself, probably. But
I'm definitely firmly in Gen X.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I'm a Gen Xer too. Thankfully, not quite a baby boomer, but almost. Yeah. Well, okay, good. So tell us about, you know, any of the other stuff you're seeing. So on that housing affordability for a moment, though, maybe a little more on that. So 25% of the markets in the country are less affordable than they have been historically, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a mouthful to say, and maybe it's a little bit hard to understand, but yeah, that's exactly right. We compare each market to itself. We don't compare it to other markets, because, which we think is more fair, because Kansas City or Wichita, where I grew up, which is one of those linear markets, is going to always be more affordable than San Francisco. But so instead of comparing it to San Francisco, which we do, but the index is really comparing Wichita to itself, not to San Francisco, which we think is a more fair measure. But even by that more fair measure, 25% of the markets are less affordable than they have been historically.
So we know that 25% are less affordable than they historically have been. But how bad is it, Darren? Like, in some of these markets, are they just insanely unaffordable?
Well, yeah, I would say they're absurdly unaffordable. Because if you look at the actual percentage of income, if you just, instead of doing the more of the nuanced index, which we do, if you just look at the raw number, the percentage of wage needed to buy a medium-priced home in some of these markets, it's over 100%. So basically, if you are making the average wages in that market, there's no way you can afford to buy a home. And those places, like the top of the heap there is Kings County, New York, which is Brooklyn. If you're making the average wages, you'd have to spend 121% of your your monthly wages, which is more than you have, to buy. And Santa Cruz, California, Marin County, California, Manhattan, Maui actually is in there. Napa County, California is in there. So yes, places like that, it's just insanely or absurdly unaffordable if you are an average blue collar wage earner.
So that means something's got to give. Either people have to lower their expectations, their wages have to go up, or prices have to come down, or interest rate, you know, people always buy on a payment, not really the price, almost doesn't matter that much, but the payment is what matters. So the interest rates have to come down. Now there's not much room for that, certainly. Yeah, it's, or, you know, people are just left out. And that's it. You know, they just don't buy and they just are renters. Tell us about, you have this other this new indicator that you're using. Tell us about that one. What's it called?
Yeah. And actually what you just said is a great segue into that, because kind of one of those other options implicit in what you just said is, you know, if a market becomes too affordable, you move.
Unaffordable. Yeah.
If it becomes unaffordable for you, one option is you move. And so this new index we have, it's called the pre-mover index, which instead of looking at completed sales data, we're looking at loan estimates that have been sent to borrowers, and it's connected to a specific house. So we're able to tell where the houses are that people are applying for loans to buy. And what we found is that's pretty highly predictive that they're actually going to buy there eventually. In the next 90 days, there's a 75% chance that home will actually sell once their loan estimate has been given on the property.
Okay, wait a sec. So this is the pre-buyer index.
Pre-mover index.
The pre-mover index. And what does it do? How do you know? How do you use this index? How do you get the data?
Yeah, I know. I went through that pretty quickly. It's not our typical public record data that we've used for most of our other reports. This is taken from basically loan estimates. So when goes back to the Dodd-Frank law, but when you apply for a loan to buy a specific property, the lender has to provide you with a loan estimate telling you everything it's going to, you know, all the loan costs and closing costs within 3 days. And so this loan estimate is data we've been able to get our hands on in a lot of markets. And what we've tested it against our public record data, and what we found is if a property has a loan estimate sent out on it, within 90 days, that property sells 76% of the time.
But Darren, how can you get the loan estimates for every lender out? I mean, that's just amazing that you can get a hold of that data.
Yeah, that is a great question, and a good qualification is it's not for every single lender. But we're getting this through service providers who I can't name because it's a little bit sensitive. And probably
for just the big lenders, I assume.
Yeah, estimate it's not the full market. It's actually probably around 15% of the market, which isn't big, but it's enough.
It's enough to show the trend.
It's enough to show the trend, right. And it's widespread geographically. So, it was very interesting to me to dig into this data, because there's actually an additional piece of this data is it breaks down. The loan estimate is broken down by type of purchase. So you have your primary
or in your investment properties, right?
Yeah, we have it broken down by primary home, second home, and then investment homes. And anyway, that's another piece of it. I can talk about it, but just the first piece is where people are moving. And one of the things that the big takeaways for me is that the markets with the highest index tend to be more of those linear markets or hybrid markets that are still affordable, but a lot of times still have access to jobs and other amenities. But even then, if you dig down into a specific metro area like Southern California here or Seattle, the counties within those markets that have the highest pre-mover index, where the most people are moving, is the outlying county. So in Seattle, it's Pierce County, which is Tacoma, which is more affordable. Here in Southern California, it's kind of the same thing we saw 10 years ago. It's places like Riverside and San Bernardino counties.
The outlying areas get it. And you said to me the great old saying, drive until you qualify. that's an old saying in real estate. And that's what people are doing because they've been priced out of the sort of the primary area that would probably be their favorite. I mean, in your area where I used to live for many years, you know, people would rather live in Irvine than Corona, right? Or Riverside or San Bernardino. So they're driving until they qualify. Right.
Yep. Yeah. But yeah. So if Corona is the only place that they can afford and they have to drive a little farther to get to their job, that's the type of place we're starting to see pop up is where people are moving. And just to give you a couple examples of the markets just nationwide that are seeing the highest index, the pre-mover index, top of the heap was Colorado Springs, Colorado, Charleston, North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, Tampa, Lexington, Kentucky, Jacksonville, Florida, Orlando. Those a lot of linear.
So that's predictive of where most buyers are going. That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And some of those markets, though, see, the problem is, here's the problem, Darren. That doesn't necessarily mean investors should run over there because that's more of an appreciation play. It doesn't mean the rest of the fundamentals of cash flow make sense, but it is interesting for sure. I've always thought, I just wish I could really, and I've tried to do this and I've interviewed companies that pretend to do it, but nobody's quite there yet. Now, Google might be able to do this, but they're not really sharing the data. But if you could look at like search traffic, right? You know, properties for sale in Memphis, you know, that means, and if that was the biggest searched term, that's a predictor that people are looking at properties there. You know, that's like a good sign, right? And so your pre-mover index is pretty interesting. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah,
but it shows demand. I think, yeah, you have to take it in context with other factors for sure. Now, interesting you mentioned Memphis because if we look at that other part of this data that I mentioned earlier, broken down just not by the pre-mover index, but by the percentage of people who are getting loan estimates who are investors or who say they're buying the property for investment purposes, Memphis is the top of the heap there. And we're showing 30% of these loan estimates were to buyers who identified themselves as investors. The second highest market was Indianapolis, and then third was Cleveland. And fourth was Durham, North Carolina, and fifth was Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And Durham's just a little too expensive, so for the most of the investment thing. But yeah, I like it. That's good. Okay, good, good stuff. So what else are you seeing out there? Is there kind of one more tidbit you can share before you go of anything that might be useful to investors and listeners?
Oh, yeah. Wow. So there's a lot of stuff.
I know that's a huge question.
You know, we have, we do a quarterly report on the we look at a very basic look at basically potential cap rates or gross rental yields. That's one you can look at. In our newsroom that you can look at, that we released back in March. And all the linear markets that you talk about really are top of the heap there. Home flipping. We did our report on that just 2 weeks ago, and we are seeing, home flipping is still very doing very well. it hit a 10-year high. Home flipping did in 2016, and we saw it kind of level off in the first quarter, but still very strong home flipping activity. And one of the things that stood out was that we are seeing slowly but surely more financing for flippers. And I think you've alluded to this as well, and that you're seeing more competition out there in the world of financing for flippers. But we're seeing an 8-year high in the percentage of home flips that were financed in the first quarter as opposed to where the flipper bought with cash.
Mm-hmm. So what does that, like, let's try and figure out what that means, right? So the home flipping activity means certainly it's a vibrant market, and there's a lot of investors out there trying to buy up whatever inventory they can get their hands on, rehab it, and resell it at a higher price. But that inventory is getting gobbled up right away. So the thing that's incentivizing these people to do it is that they know they can sell the property fast. Okay, and there's a huge waiting demand out there for properties. So it's pretty interesting. So when home flipping activity goes down a lot, I'd say that's a bad sign, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that means the kind of the front lines of the real estate market are seeing signs of trouble, and so they're backing out. And that's, I mean, if you look at our home flipping, we have a historical graph. It just fell off a cliff it started falling off a cliff as early as mid 2007, and then it really plummeted to a bottom hit bottom about late 2009, early 2010.
Right. The interesting thing is, though, the contrarians who did it back then made a bundle of money.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Right. It's home flipping does have a lot of kind of, I don't know what to call it. Baggage, sure, is maybe the wrong word.
Right.
You know, or bandwagon flippers who jump on the bandwagon and quickly jump off the bandwagon. But they do tend to be the folks who say, hey, look, if we're starting to see early signs that this market is softening, we're going to jump off and stop the flipping activity. We're definitely not seeing that. Because of that, the lack of inventory that you mentioned, it's a double-edged sword. It makes it harder to find deals on the front end, but certainly if you can find a deal on the back end, there's plenty of buyers to sell these properties to.
Yeah, no question about it. Interesting stuff. Give out your website, Darren. Tell people where they can find out more.
Yeah, all of the news that I've been talking about, the reports are on, we still run the realtytrack.com website, even though our corporate brand is Atom Data Solutions.
And that's ATTOM, by the way, right?
Yep. The two T's. Think of the two T's as a pi symbol.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But anyway, those reports are all still on realtytrack.com/news. It's a great source, and it's all free content there. And then we do have a subscription service to help you to go in and research properties. And then we also have a marketing list creation tool at marketinglists.realtytrack.com, where you can go in and actually select based on your criteria of type of homes and type of homeowner, create a marketing list to market to source properties.
Yeah, fantastic. Darren Blomquist, thanks for joining us again, and we look forward to talking with you in the future.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.